they're getting wild for me. And all the pretty chicks all wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this out for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me. And when this beat drop, I know they gon' lean. Word they be.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Amon Sharon's Pirate Radio Podcast. On today's episode, we're lucky enough to have another illustrious guest, Christian Serratos. Christian, thank you.
That's a big word.
I would have to argue for the illustrious tag, even though that is my standard introduction.
All right.
Fair enough. So thank you very much for doing this. I'm very excited.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. So I've been tuning in for a while now, but what made you start streaming?
I don't know. I mean, like, I've always been into, like, video games, but, like, you know, I played Rocket League for a good while there. That was my game for a minute, and, like, I don't know what it was. Like, someone had to have turned me on to Twitch. I want to say that someone introduced me to Twitch, and I, like, saw people doing it, and it just looked fun. Like, for me, it's like, video games are already fun, but, like, I genuinely enjoy, like, talking, connecting with people, like, meeting people.
Right.
Just having that general, like, social, like, making gaming more social, for me, only made gaming more fun. And I think that's what, like, made me want to stream.
Right. That definitely adds to the experience, the social aspect. That's kind of similar to how I started podcasting. I was just listening to podcasts all day and figured, you know, why not try this myself?
Yeah, exactly. And it is fun to, like, I tell people all the time, it's like, they're like, oh, you play video games? Like, yeah, but, like, it's not like I'm sitting in a room by myself. It's like I'm either playing with friends or I got people in the stream. It's very social. Like, it's a very social thing. And I think people have a misconception of, you know, why people like doing it and what gaming, you know, entails, I guess.
Yeah, it's not all just, like, dudes in their mom's basement eating Cheetos and drinking Mountain Dew.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Not breaking monitors and keyboards every night. Like.
Yeah, minimal raging. Yeah.
Yeah. Minimal.
Minimal. Yeah. Depends. But what games you been playing lately?
I'm getting back into Smash Bros. Ultimate again. That was my game for a while, and I'm pretty decent. I would like to say I'm decent at the game, but, like, most people, like, would probably say, like, nah. Like, I underplay everything I do. I live by it. Like, stay humble, stay hungry. I don't like talking myself up. I've never been that way. So it's like, I'd like to say I'm decent at the game, but, like, Smash Bros. Ultimate. And then I haven't been playing Call of Duty Warzone as much just because I've been working so much. I got a new job.
Nice.
For a construction and electric company right now. So that's pretty cool. Like back when I first started streaming, it was Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started playing Apex Legends. We threw some Sea of Thieves in there. And then I really started playing Smash Bros. So I play basically whatever I feel like playing. Like, I tell people, like, don't play a game just because it's, like, popular.
The game to play right now, yeah.
Yeah, play whatever game you're enjoying, because that's what's going to make, one, gaming enjoyable for you, and two, streaming. If you force yourself to play something just because it's popular or because of viewers or whatever, you're not going to have fun with it.
Yeah.
Play what you want.
For sure, I agree with that.
I'm definitely a variety streamer. I'll play any. I played Among Us, too. That one's fun.
That's
fun,
yeah. I just need, like, 9 more friends, and then I can play.
Yeah, you gotta get a big group going. That one was that's like a mission. It was a mission to try to get those games together because it requires 10. I'm like, geez, like, we'd sit here for like an hour and a half, not even doing anything, just waiting for people to come into the stream. Just like, come on, just try to drag anyone we could in. They're fun though. It's fun.
Yeah, it sounds fun. Who do you play as in Smash?
Ness.
Ness.
No,
okay.
I do not spam PK Fire. Oh my god, I play Ness, but, like, I truly, like, I don't know if you've ever watched me play Smash Bros. On stream. I know the character, like, the back of my hand, to where I, like, use every single little move he can. So I'll say I'm a sweaty in Smash Bros. Like, I'm a tryhard. Like, I can say that. But, yeah, I played Ness. You played, or?
Not recently. I used to play at my friend's house in high school.
The typical. Kind of like party game, or it's like,
hey, yeah, like a bunch of people over. Yeah, so that was kind of my extent, but I definitely enjoy watching it, and it was definitely fun to play with friends.
Oh yeah, no, it's I mean, that's what it's made for. It's a party game for friends, you know.
Definitely.
Just grab a controller and start smashing buttons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty simple in that way. What was your favorite game growing up?
growing first system I can remember us getting was a Super Nintendo. So, like, I'm going to say, I mean, we used to play Tetris and Dr. Mario all the time, like a classic like that, with my dad and my mom. Then we'd have, like, you know, your Street Fighter, your Mortal Kombat. Those are fun. But I think, like, if I had to connect one to, like, now where I could look back and be like, that was the game, like, my favorite game, there's two of them. It was Yoshi's Island.
Okay.
Super Nintendo. Like, that game is forever classic. And then Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. That game, if you've never played it, it's so much fun. Like, it's probably one of the best Mario games ever made that no one talks about. Like, everyone talks about, like, Mario Sunshine, and which is a great game, and what's the other one? Paper Mario, but, like, Mario RPG for the Super Nintendo, that one and Yoshi's Island. Those are my two, like, growing up, for sure.
All right. Sure. Much respect to that. I'll definitely have to check that out.
Because... Dude, yeah, it's a great game. Like, the replay value on that game is... You could play it again and again and again and just, like, never get tired of it. Because you could – there's so many different ways you could play it or, like, train the characters. Because you basically – what you do is, like, you gather a team. Like, you pick up characters. Eventually, Bowser's on your team. Peach is on your team. These other characters named Mallow, Geno. And you get to, like, rotate them in and out. Kind of – imagine, like, Pokemon fused with Mario.
That's
like, the easiest way I could almost describe it.
That's,
you know?
Cool. Yeah. You have to develop, like, your squad and your five or whatever,
yeah,
whatever works,
yeah,
in that game.
Yeah, you're three. So you get five, but you only can play three at a time.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. But it's a good game. Mario RPG.
Okay. Cool. Next question I got is, what is your favorite video game franchise? It's another tough one. I can go first, if that helps.
Actually, I think I got one. I think I got one. It's Crash Bandicoot.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. For my series, yeah, it's Crash Bandicoot. I think that was one of the very few ones that I played a lot of, just, like, sequentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of any other video games that I played from, like, oh, I played this one and that one and the next one. Like, I never did that with Call of Duty. I never did that with Spyro. I played a couple of those, but not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Marios, like, I played... here and there. I guess technically that's still a franchise, not just Mario, but this one specifically, Mario Party. Like,
yeah,
I played all the Mario technically that's a specific franchise of Mario, right. So I would say a Crash Bandicoot, Mario Party,
that's okay, that's very, yeah, fair. For me, it's Assassin's Creed.
I'm so jealous of people like you, because, like, I don't know what it's like to have the nostalgia of playing the very first game of a big storyline game,
mm-hmm,
and then, like, writing out, you know, the entire, like, franchise,
right,
series. Like, I don't know.
I didn't even do that. I started with the third one, which was the American Revolution, but I did go back and start with Altair in the original. So I've played every one of them.
That's kind of how I feel about Uncharted. I started with Uncharted 4, mm-hmm, and I loved it, and now I'm like, I want to go back to the first one and play them, you know, all the way,
right,
through, because the, I mean, I didn't really need, people were in my stream, they watched me play, they're like, oh, you don't need to know anything about the first three to enjoy the fourth. And I'm,
right,
like, okay, so I'll play it, because I think it was free on PlayStation at the time. I played it, and I freaking loved it, and now I'm like, man, I want to go back and play all of them, like.
Right, yeah, definitely, that's what I ended up doing, and the third ended up being my favorite one, but.
The third one of.
Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed.
Yeah,
you said that was the American Revolution,
yeah.
I remember the trailer for that one very well, actually.
Yeah, it was a really good trailer and really good game.
Yeah.
After I finish Finals, I'm going to buy Valhalla, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And that one
is Viking.
Is that for Xbox?
No, it's for both.
It's for both? It's on,
yeah,
the other side?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For some reason, I thought...
It's definitely not exclusive.
I'm tripping.
Yeah.
No, it's not an exclusive. No, it's not. No.
Yeah. Yeah, but what are you looking forward to? A lot of big drops came in November. Is there anything you haven't bought yet, or 2021 that you're looking forward to?
I don't have a PS5 because everyone's psychotic.
Yeah, like, I'm in the same boat.
They're impossible to get. Like, you might as well be fucking chasing the fucking Lucky Charms guy. I'm trying to get one. You ain't gonna get it. Like, I was just like, I don't know. Like, I want a PS5. I'm in no rush to get one. I'll get one when I get one. Whatever.
Right.
As far as exclusives or games that come out, honestly, nothing is, like, I know everyone's on Cyberpunk. I'm not really, like, shacked on that.
I'm not high on that either right now.
No. I think the only one that I would be even remotely, like, I'm, like, super, or, like, excited to try is the Spider-Man game for the PS5.
Miles Morales.
Yeah, Miles Morales. Yeah, I mean, I loved that movie. That movie is literally one of my favorite Marvels ever, even though it was all animated. Like, it's still a great movie.
I got to show you this real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me if you can see.
Nah, yes, let's go. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. So, no, I love that movie. I think it's so well done. Yeah, I guess I would say just the Spider-Man, Miles Morales game for the PS5.
Yeah, definitely. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to – we'll jump into movies real quick since we brought up Marvel, Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
They got to do it right. They got to do it right.
Man, they really do. This is like if anybody knows anything about like Marvel or comic book people or just like we're so picky.
Mm-hmm.
We're just so entitled. They're just so like, dude, you ruined it. Da-da-da-da. Like, we want it to be so well done. Hey, real quick, love you too, Lando. Thank you for the 14-month subscription, homie. I appreciate you. 14 months, man. That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyways. Any good questions in the chat?
They're just chilling right now. I know my boy Lodge is in here. Lando, Jesus is in here. They're probably just either listening or honestly – most of these guys, like Lando, 14 months, he's been in the stream. Jesus has known me like 2 years. Lodge has known me for over a year. They know pretty much
almost
everything I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, yeah, I do that.
All right, well, if you see anything good, feel free to shout it out.
Oh, yeah, for sure, guys. If you're in chat and you think of a question you want to just randomly ask me that you don't know about me, just shoot it.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm very much looking forward to Star Wars, the 10 new Disney Plus, and the 10 new Marvel.
So
but
great.
There's so much stuff.
Yeah, there's so much stuff. I think the one I'm excited about most are the Star Wars ones, and I think, like, specifically the one that everyone is like, the Obi-Wan.
Yeah, Kenobi, definitely.
It's like, it's Ewan McGregor.
And Hayden Christensen.
And Hayden, exactly. It's like,
yeah.
How can you not geek out at that if you're a Star Wars fan? Like, you get literally Obi-Wan and Anakin, like, right back. Same
yeah,
actors.
I heard a really good comparison on Twitter. I don't remember who tweeted it, but it was like, we saw, if you're comparing Darth Vader to Michael Jordan, we saw him, like, 98, 99. We never saw, like, 95, 96 Darth Vader, so I'm really looking forward to that.
That's funny. Yep, exactly.
Because the best we saw of him in terms of, like, lightsaber fighting was in Rogue One, and that was for, like, 10 seconds.
In Rogue One? Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So, I think we'll see a lot more of that in terms of like
better,
the
man.
Best quality effects and all that.
I told so many people about the Rise of Skywalker. I go, that was such a disappointing final scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's... I'm sorry, but like, yes, like there was a couple of like ooh ah parts, but like all we wanted is all I said. I said they could have left the movie, the entire movie of Rise of Skywalker, exactly the same, the entire fucking thing. All we wanted was a 10 to 15 minute super epic, well choreographed lightsaber battle. That's it. We could care less about everything else. Just a 10 to 15 minute, like, really, you know, Revenge of the Sith-esque battle. We're good.
Yeah, that's you're right. We didn't get that because it was like – whole thing with the Emperor, and we never really got it was a letdown in that sense in terms of the action.
They could have let again, they could have even done the very final scene the same way, but like just right before that,
give us what we want. Yeah,
something. Yeah, can we get a little bit of that Revenge of the Sith,
yeah,
nostalgia?
I can't disagree with that. I guess I'm a little higher on the sequel trilogy than some people, but I definitely agree that the action could have been better, as you're saying.
Oh yeah, for
yeah.
Sure. Who's winning the ship in the NFL this year? Oh man, I
just gotta go basic and say the Chiefs.
I know, like that's, I hate saying that, but like, hey, the Bills are looking good now.
Bills,
too,
yeah.
Though. Like that dude, like, man, I don't know.
I think they're a contender.
There's a lot of good teams
in the AFC.
And the NFL this year has been so like unpredictable. It's like every week. You see a team. I mean, like even though Breeze is hurt, like the Eagles beating the Saints.
Yeah,
like,
that was wild. Yeah.
What? So I can't even. There's a few teams that I would pick. I would say like yeah, the Chiefs obviously have a great shot. The Bills are looking hot right now. They're looking good. The Packers even, like, they're scary when they're on. I mean, Seattle's always kind of one of those, like, oh, like, careful.
Don't count them out. Defense
being absolute dog shit.
Right.
And then the Rams, too, even. Like, they're in the toughest division in football, but they're – I don't know. There's just a lot of good teams.
Who's your team?
I can't even pick one. I can't.
Who's your team? The Raiders, okay.
What a tough loss.
Well, yeah.
They're not making playoffs. But you know what? The bright spot of last week, we finally fired that piece of shit defensive coordinator. He's gone! Like, literally, that was the win,
well,
is that we got rid of our defensive coordinator.
Speaking of defensive coordinators, I'm a Jets fan, so obviously.
Oof!
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. I have nothing to
say. Yeah, exactly. That was against the Raiders, too, so.
Yep.
There you go.
The Hail Henry.
Yeah, that was wild. So, all right. So, how did you guys start the Sunday Family Sports Dream?
Yeah, that Sunday Family. Well, I mean, we do it on Sundays or Saturdays or whenever we kind of like coordinated together. I don't know. This was something that we've actually talked about for like maybe over a year, maybe even closer to 2 years, where we're just like, let's just, you know, get on camera and be ourselves because we're pretty rowdy, we're pretty loud, we're very opinionative. And it's like when you talk about like sports talk shows, that's kind of what you want.
Exactly.
You know, your Stephen A's, your Max Kellerman's, your First Take where they're just kind of going at it. It's like that's what's entertaining. And we're like, when we thought of, I don't even know how we thought about what, we must have been sitting around drinking on a Sunday, you know, having a sports talk or sports argument at home, and then we kind of just went, why don't we just do this on camera? You know, why don't we just throw this out there and see if people like it? And that was kind of it. It was just like, let's do our own little twist on kind of those sports talk shows where they go at it, and it's a little different because we're all family, and like my dad's like the moderator, and he's like assigning points and all this stuff to us.
That's cool. So it's like around the horn.
Yeah. Huh?
It's like around the horn with the points. And
no, exactly. So it's like we take like little elements of, you know, certain shows where it's like, okay, my dad's assigning points. We're arguing the topics. We do hot takes and all this stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's our own little twist with little differences here and there. I think the funnest part is for a lot of people is that, like, we're all family. It's like the dad moderating his three sons. Like,
yeah, that's cool.
Like, it's really different. And my dad's just as big of a dork as we are. So, I mean, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah, that's a fun take on it. And I definitely like tuning in just to see some hot takes and just not take it too serious and just rowdy. Have fun with it. Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. So,
the Titans, Lando, you a Titans fan? Oh, that's right. You're down in that area. Duh. Boy, I forgot. Titan, I mean, I don't know, man.
We'll see. Derrick Henry.
All over the Colts. And Derrick Henry, man, when he's how much can you carry a team? That's all I'm going to say. How much can one running back literally win a Super Bowl?
I don't know.
Because that's what it seems like it would have to be, essentially. But I don't know. Tannehill's not bad either.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready to get into your running career?
Dude, yeah. Oof. I get emotional here. Like, I haven't talked about this in a minute, but yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for talking about it with me. What made you first want to start running and running competitively?
Well, the reason I first started running was because I was too small to play any other sport. And not to say that I couldn't have, but I'm a freshman. I'm 4'11", 90 pounds, and I played football in my first semester. In the fall of my first freshman year, and they're like, I mean, I didn't get tired. I could run around and catch a ball as a little receiver, but like, I, you know, it was tiny. It was just like the pads didn't even fit me. The knee pads would just fall to my shin because the pants were so loose. So it's like, okay, this isn't it. And then in the spring, I did track. Now, what made me want to do track was one, not because I was small, but like in middle school, we had this weekly fitness test called the 20-minute run in PE. And you had to complete a certain amount of laps to pass. like, I think it was 8 laps. 7 was like a C and 8 was a B or an A, something like that. And I would do like 12 just because, like, I would complete that many laps. And I was always like ahead of everybody. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did that in middle school. I was like, I tried track, you know, like, I guess I'll do track. And I did track. And that's kind of what, like, why I started running in the first place. And I wasn't very good. Like, you can go look at the high school times from freshman, sophomore, even junior year. You're like, really? Like, this kid? Like, it really wasn't anything amazing. I think the reason I started and kept doing it was, one, I did genuinely enjoy the self-progress. Like, track and cross-country, you're racing against yourself, really. Like, yeah, right. there's other people in the race, but when you're not, like, you know, varsity, you're going for, like, the number one, your first place in your conference or wherever, you're really just racing against yourself. You're trying to self-improve that time. And kind of seeing that progress every little race, like, was really satisfying to me. I mean, it's, like, right there on paper. No one can take that away from me. It's like, oh, look, I'm getting better. I'm getting better. I'm getting better. And from there, I was just like, let's just keep doing this. You know, so I sophomore year, instead of playing football, I ran cross country. And then I kept doing that, cross country, track, cross country, track, cross country, track. I never trained year round in high school, though. I just didn't, but I still was getting better and better, partly because I just kept doing it. And then second, I finally hit my growth spurt. Woo! And I grew like 8 inches, you know, in a matter of a year from my junior to senior year. And then that's when I kind of like really started. I hit a big improvement when that happened, massive. And that's what kind of got me thinking, like, oh, like, I just improved, like, a lot. Like, I got second in our conference in the 1600. Actually, that race is still one of my favorite races of all time. Our league championship in the 1600, we swept 1 through 4. We went 422, 423, 424, 425 for high school,
wow.
Which is not bad. Yeah, which is not bad. Yeah, yeah. Our high school, our distance squad in high school was pretty stacked.
Yeah. No, definitely.
I credit a lot of, like, the progress I made to, like, those guys that I had around me. Because, like, so we had 422, 423, 424, 425. And then our 800 group, and this is high school, went 156, 158, 158, 159, 159. We had 5 guys sub 2 in the 8 as a high school team. Like, not bad at all.
How fast was your DMR?
We never went to any relays.
Oh, man.
Our coach never took us to any relays. I know. We always talk about that. I'm like, God, like, we could have really done something pretty cool in a DMR for high school. But that was, yeah, we were in a small high school. Our coach just didn't do stuff like that. So.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, like, that was basically it. It was just, like, I made friends. Well, the main thing was, like, one, I made all my closest friends through running. And two, I just loved the self-improvement. I could see it on paper. It was a simple thing in my head. Hey, you're getting better. Just keep getting better. That's literally how I thought of it. Just like, what's stopping you from improving? Nothing. Just keep doing this thing, and you'll see that time keep dropping.
Mm-hmm. My next question was going to be how you fell in love with it, but it sounds like you already kind of started to answer that.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of how I started really falling in love with it. One was, like, really meeting all my closest friends through running, like, basically getting, like, a community of, you know, like-minded people who are also experiencing the same, like, grind as you know, that same hustle and wanting to improve, which was awesome. And then, yeah, like, watching my time, like, slowly improve week after week after meet was, like, super satisfying. It was, like, addicting, almost. Like,
right.
I mean, it wasn't almost addicting. It was addicting. I was, like, I kept chasing that high of a PR. I just PR'd another PR, like, improving. I kept chasing that high. So that was really what made me fall in love with it. That, and I don't think I realized it back then. I would say this is more of a why I still love running to this day thing, is what it does for me, like, emotionally and mentally.
Absolutely.
It's just such a release. It's such a escape from life, and you can just go, you throw on some music, just let, you know, exhaust yourself and take your mind off kind of everything. That's kind of like more of a now why I still love it, but it still did that for me back then.
No, I can definitely relate to that. Just taking that hour, half hour, just break from life and just getting like a mental reset. If nothing else, that's what keeps people coming back, I think.
Yeah, I think people love running in general is again, it's self-improvement. It's it's kind of addicting, chasing that high of getting better and better. And then at the same time, it's a great way to release, kind of forget your problems and just be by yourself on a trail completely alone, you know, and just go. Just don't think about anything. Enjoy it. Enjoy the day. Just forget everything.
It's easy to just zone out and forget everything.
Hey, what's up, Lone Brute? Did you ever run the 400? If so, what was your PR? Lando, I ran the open 400 once my senior year at Montana State. I actually ran 49.2 in the open. My fastest split was a 47.8 in the 4x4. So, like, I was our anchor for the 4x4 my senior year at MSU. So my fastest split is 47.8. And the reason my split and my open are so different, because a 1.4 seconds is a huge difference, is because I take forever to get, like, moving. So having that time to, like, go running full speed by the time I grab the baton versus, like, starting from a complete standstill, you know, stop, for me is everything, because I take forever to, like, get up to speed. Like, the speed is there, but it's just, like, it just takes me a while to get there.
So you brought up MSU. What was the recruiting process like? Did you go there after high school?
No. So, you guys cool with I ask? Yeah, if you want to ask a question, Lone Brute, totally. Throw it in the chat. Like, you can totally ask for advice.
Definitely.
No problem. The recruiting process was actually, again, I wasn't very fast in high school, not until my senior year. And when you're in a big state like California, they're recruiting you sophomore, junior year.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not making noise then, they don't really care what you do senior year. So despite, like, my senior year times being decent, but even for California, it's just not good enough, unfortunately, to get offers or looked at. I only had one option. I was like, I had no scholarship offers. I was still 17 at the time because I was young for my age.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have my driver's license back then still. I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to leave to college? Like, I'm stuck. I'm like, I can't even get out of here. I'm going to hitchhike on the side of the highway. Like, hey, I'm going to Chico State. Yeah. No, like, I gotta figure shit out. So I was like, okay, I clearly love this sport, and I'm still very young and naive and immature in a way for my age. Like, well, let's just go to junior college. So the junior college right there, right here in Salinas, Hartnell Junior College, historic in Northern California for just having a great, successful track and field program, all dating all the way back to the 70s, dominant, you know, for a long, long time, still is. And I knew that they had a good program and that they have been notorious for developing athletes and sending them on a scholarship. Whether it's like NAIA or D3 or D2, didn't matter. But they were really good at just developing athletes and setting them off on scholarship. And I was like, well, I want to do that. Like, I want to keep running and let's see what Hartnell has to offer. You know, let's do it.
Right.
So I go there, and that was like a huge part of what molded me into like who I became as a runner. That's where I started training year round. That's where I started lifting weights. That's where I started just understanding the value of like work ethic and putting in the summer miles to train, like everything. And I could probably say I've never grinded. There was never a 2-year period where I grinded harder or wanted something more. And so I went from, to put it into perspective, I went from a 203.800 to a 151. This is in 2 years. 203 to 151, a 4:23.1600 to a 3:47.1500, which is like a 4:03 or 4:04.16.
Right.
And then a 9:52.3200 to a 14:45.5K. So like, nowhere in the ball. So yeah, 9:52. It's like, okay, I'm running.
Oh, 9:52.
Yeah, 9:52 in the 32. So it's like, right, I'm running 4:56 for 2 1600s, but a 5K at 14:45, I'm running 4:40. Yeah, like 40. Yeah. So it's like total night and day difference. Now that I dropped my times, now I'm getting offers. Now I'm taught Wichita State and all these other random D1s. Got Montana State was there. Southern Oregon was a good NAIA school. Chico State. I'm getting offers from a bunch of schools. Texas A&M said I could, yeah, they had a spot on their team if I wanted. That's where Montana State reached out and said, hey, we would love to have you out for a visit. And it's so funny because when they called, I was just like, who? Like, I literally was like, where? Like, where's Montana on a freaking map? Like, I didn't do so.
Hold that thought for 1 second. I just got to pause and then. All right, we're back. We were just talking about your dramatic improvement at Hartnell College.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was huge. Like, man, like I said, I don't think there was ever a two-year period of my life where I ever wanted something more, grinded harder for something in my life. I credit Christopher Zepeda, Coach Z, man, legend, for a lot of that. There's something he does not lack is fire and work ethic. Mm-hmm. And just, I mean, he just brings it every single day to practice. And, like, it just lights a fire inside you, too. Like, I was competitive in high school, but at Hartnell, holy hell, like, it was like I had this little flame and he just poured gasoline on it. Like, let's fucking go. Like, literally, like, that's what it felt like. And I took it to Montana State. You know, I got my scholarship from them. Shout out Coach K for giving me my shot, who was the original head coach. And shout out Lyle Weiss, the current head coach. Miss you, Lyle. Because Coach K had the scholarship, but Lyle was the one that turned him on to me because Lyle used to be an assistant coach at the junior college I was at. So Coach Z phones up old buddy Lyle, who was, they were coaching with the guy, and said, I have a kid, take a look at him. Lyle then goes to Coach K, the head coach who was in charge of the distance program at the time, says, we might want to take a look at this kid. Like, you know. And funny enough, the reason they had scholarship was because Pat Casey transferred to Oklahoma. So I got his old scholarship. When they found out that Pat Casey was leaving, they're like,
uh-oh,
we need someone else to replace that, and that was me.
That's
literally
funny.
Like, that was, I was like his replacement because he didn't let them know till like the spring, and by the spring they had already recruited everyone, but I hadn't signed yet, so they were like, get him on the phone and get him on a plane out here right now.
Shout out to Pat Casey.
Yeah, shout out to Pat Casey. Hey, thanks Pat, I appreciate it. No college debt, nothing. Woo! Thank you,
let's
Pat.
Let's go. So,
I owe you about 20 grand.
Yeah, at least. So you said you had like a 349 or like a 403 equivalent at the time?
347, 1500, which is around a 404 equivalent of mm-hmm. 1600 at the time.
So
a 19-second drop-off from high school.
Definitely.
Pretty massive.
Not too bad. So you're the second ever guest I've had on who's broken four. Talk about that experience.
First time breaking four. Well, just noticed the Baby Yoda Funko Pop stick. Yeah, Lando likes Funko Pop stick. I have another friend who's Justin. He goes by JPix in chat. He has tons of them. Tons of them.
Nice.
I got to start getting some, honestly.
Yeah. It's the wave.
It is. It really is. So, first time breaking four. Well, obviously, there was... You know, there was the conversion mile. There was the five.
I did my research. Yes.
There was
the altitude.
4-minute, 5-second mile I ran. But I ran it at 5,000 feet and I ran it on a 200 meter flat track. And, you know, so I ran 405, but the elevation takes 5 seconds off and the flat track takes another four off. So it converted all the way down to a 356. Which gave me the number one spot in the nation at the time. And oh my God, did the running world just explode. Just, I saw tweet after tweet. What the fuck? Like, conversions are so dumb. Like, that's BS. Like, what the? Like, no, there's no way that's legit. 9 seconds off a mile. I'm just like, and I just had to sit there in Montana, like,
we'll see. We'll see.
Like,
I'll show them.
Like, yeah, I just nodded my head, like, okay, like, I get it, whatever, fine. You want to downplay me? You want to downplay my time? I understand. And, like, to be fair, it's like no one had ever heard of me. I had never even been to a national meet. I was never an All-American. No one knows where the hell Montana State is. So there's just a lot of, like, questions in people's head at that time. Like, what the – like, what is that? Like, that's BS. Funny enough, a little tribute to that facility, that track, and the elevation. After that happened, every year since my senior year when I got that fat conversion, we've had multiple individual athletes from certain universities come to our facility and try to get a free sub-4 mile. And you know how many people have done it? Zero! Hold that L.
That's awesome.
Zero! It's not easy. It's legit. Conversions are there for a reason.
Yeah. All right.
My little rant on conversions.
So that was your home track where you ran that?
That was my home track, yeah.
Gotcha.
That was my home track.
Okay.
So what's your take on flow track? What about flow tracks? Be more specific. What do you mean, what's my take on flow track? That's a little vague.
Setting up a trap for you.
Yeah, I know. So anyways, I run my first sub-4 mile. I don't see that as my first sub-4
right.
mile. It wasn't. It was a converted mile. And then I had the Husky Classic on Valentine's Day. At Seattle, my only indoor race at sea level. This was literally do or die. This is like, this is your only chance to prove everyone wrong and shut them up. Like, freaking Eminem style. Like, literally, one shot, one opportunity. Like, let's go. So it's like, it was. And I went into that race with so much emotion, aside from, like, the whole like converted mile crap. My aunt, a lot of people don't know this, but my aunt on my mom's side, so my mother's sister passed away the weekend before.
Oh my God.
My tia Lupi, rest in peace. She died of cancer. My mom had already planned out to come on this trip and everything, and they still came out. My godparents did, on her side of the family, she did, my brother, like, through all the family stuff that she should have probably stayed home. She's like, no, I still got to be there. Like, I told you, you know, my family said they'd be there at the race, and then they did. They showed up. So, like, aside from, like, the fire of, like, wanting to prove all the doubters wrong, I had this, like, emotional, like, oh, man, just – I don't know how to describe it. Just this – not desire, but – I couldn't fail. I can't describe it other than, like, I refused to lose that day. I was not going to. I couldn't. Like, for my tia, my family being there, and that was it. Like, I didn't even need, honestly, the fire of, like, yeah, the doubters and all that. Like, that still helped, but, like, nah. Like, in our family, like, family is everything here. Like, with us, it's just family over everything. The only thing above family is God. And when they seeing them there and, like, knowing what had just happened, like, it just wasn't going to happen. I just wasn't going to lose that day. And sure as hell, I didn't. So that race, yeah, that I don't think a lot of people know that whole little extra part of the story. They know, like, all the converted mile and, you know, people doubting, like, if I could actually do it or not, whatever. But they don't really know that part. That sat with me, still sits with me very, very heavy. And, yeah, I mean, when you really think about it, it's like my first sub-4 mile, my first true sub-4 mile was a 3:55. It wasn't a 3:59. It wasn't an 8. No, it was the first time my legs physically moved at a sub-4 mile was 3:55.27. Win it, UW. Like, everyone just shut up. I don't want to hear a word from you guys about convert. Just everyone. Just it was the biggest, like, statement race, and I can say, like, ever in my career, I think. Like, because it just was there. Yeah. Was just this whole, you know, just, like, yeah, just a little bit of that. Just stir the pot as much as they can. Let's build it up to this, like, climactic event, this one race where, like, everyone's watching and, like, let's see, you know, they're just waiting, and then I get to walk off the track, like, just so
Jordan shrug what are you gonna say now?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so much emotion was in that race. I remember right after, you could even actually see it in the video of that race. My mom comes up to me and she like hugs me. Like, you'll see, like, you know, the race ends and they're like still cameras on me and they're like panning over. My teammates come over, my coach comes over, high fiving them, screaming, yelling, and then you see like this little short lady like walk over, like, and you just see me like hugging her, and I'm like rubbing her, and you can't see her face because like she's her back to the camera, but like her eyes were just bawling. I mean, just tears. She's just crying in my ear. I'm just trying. And she was talking about my Dia Lupi, like, you know, I wish you could be here, this and that. And I'm just I know, Mom. Like, I know, like, oh my God, there's just so much emotion in that race.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like the perfect storm between the doubters about the conversion and then going through such emotion in your family life. And there was just nothing and no one that was going to stop you that day. So
exactly. No, there really wasn't. There was no other option. There was no way in hell I was going to walk off that track not just succeeding in one way or another. I didn't know if I was going to win. I didn't know what time I was going to run, but it sure as hell I wasn't going to fail.
Right.
Like, in whatever aspect you want to look at it, whether it's winning or just running the sub-4, I just refused to fail that day, and I wasn't going to.
Thank you.
That was a very crazy race and a very special sub-4 mile.
Yeah, definitely. It's obviously so memorable, and thank you very much for sharing that.
Absolutely. No, I'm a pretty open book.
Like, yeah,
I don't mind sharing.
So the next big race I wanted to talk about was one of my, like, the most exciting races I've seen, and I just watched it again today to refresh my memory, but it was the 2015 Indoor Nationals. Fun fact, you're the second guest I've had who's ran sub four, and the second guest in that race, the first being Daniel Wynn.
I saw on your Instagram like a little blurb of him,
and
I was like, oh, he's Daniel.
So that's pretty cool. My goal now to have Johnny and Edward and Chad on try to get everyone in that race.
Johnny's post race interview was so fun. I still remember that. Like, there's a little interview of him where James Cameron at the time, who was covering like the whole, at the time he was doing the whole Serratos piece, like the whole thing about me and trying to beat Chez and the UW, everything. Like, there was a whole thing on me that year, and he was doing all of it. And he interviewed Johnny at the end, and he threw that little interview in one, like, the ending trailer. And it was like, Johnny was just like, oh, yeah, I'll just, like, he's like, yeah, I just figured we had a game plan. I'll just tuck right in. And then he was like, boom, he's gone. And he was like, oh, well, I guess we're going to sit back now. And he's just like, and then what he said, he was like, props to him. He's like, I've never seen anybody do that. He was like, yeah, it was a good plan.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it was a good plan unless you're being chased by the greatest NCAA athlete to ever walk this fucking earth.
Right.
Like, I tell people all the time, I go, the amount of luck in my life to getting second place in every substantial race is unreal. So, like, it dates back to, like, high school. I got second in our league championships in the 1600, which is, like, the most significant race at the time for me. Junior college, I got second at state. Mind you, my 1500 time would have won the state title every year for the last 30 years except for that year.
Damn.
So I would have been state champion any other year. But I got second, so it's like, oh, I got second, and I was a part of the fastest 1,500 meter in California junior college history. Wow. So that's why I got second. So it's like, okay, there's some bad luck. And then it's like, okay, now let's go to the national title game. National title race. And I beat the former reigning NCAA champion, Anthony Rotich, UTEP. The year before that, Chez wasn't in the mile, and Anthony Rotich was the NCAA champion, and he smoked everyone. And I beat him by a clean 2.5 seconds. So it's like I beat the former NCAA champion, but who's also in that race? Again, the greatest NCAA athlete to ever walk this earth. Like, that's just my luck to where it's like, that's who beat me. And at the same time, it's like tip of the cap, and I can't really be too upset because I'm like, when I think about it, it's like, yeah, you lost to the greatest. It's like you're still salty. It's like losing to Jordan or losing to, like, you know, Kobe. Like, how, I mean, I just kind of go, I did everything I could.
And an important distinction for everyone listening, he's referring to the best NCAA athlete ever, not just in track or cross country. Show me someone who's won as much as Cesarek in any other sport.
For anyone who doesn't know in chat, the guy that beat me in the 2015 Indoor National Championship mile race is not just the greatest NCAA college, he's not just the greatest college athlete for track. He is the greatest college champion in all of sports college history. No athlete in the history of sports or college has won more national individual titles than Edward Cesarek. That is who I lost to. So again, how can I be mad? I'm not, but like, am I still like, why me? Kind of like I'm cursed, like the second place. I'm like, why? Why did my luck, I couldn't just, you know, like a little, but at the same time, it's like, it's not really a curse. I jokingly call it a curse. That's not real. It's just like, that's how the cookie crumbles.
It's how life goes. So talk about,
as Bruce Nolan would say,
talk about your strategy going into that race and your decision to make the move when you did, and then we'll get into.
That was that, in a sense, where my coach was like, we're not going to let this be a sandbag race. Fuck, he was just like, fuck that. We're not just going to sit back. He's like, you're in way too good a shape. There was a workout that I did going into that race that I did. Mind you, this is a workout I did in elevation. They covered it. They did a video of it. So it's one of my favorite workouts of all time. It's 2-2-8-3. So it's a 200, a 200, an 800 all at mile pace, and then a 300 at 800 pace. Recovery usually goes 90 seconds. Actually, no, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 4 minutes. So a good amount of recovery. That's why it's supposed to be at like true race pace. So 2-2-8-3. I'll just say the 800 splits throughout the set. I went 159, 158, 152 at the end of a workout. In elevation, I ran a 152 at the end of a workout on my
at elevation.
Yeah, in elevation, mind you. So, like, I was fit. Like, my coach was looking at me like, dude, you're in like 350 shape. You just haven't had the race. Like, he told me that. Like, you are like in insanely good shape right now. Yeah, you ran 355. He's like, but you can run so much faster if you have the right race. Like, so the strat was, we're going to use that fitness. If it's slow, he's like, I want you to take off at 1,000. And now, mind you, when he said take off, he didn't mean run a 53 in the middle of the race. So he meant, like, ditch them and start running, like, sub-4 pace and then slowly chop it down. That was the original, like, thought of, like, you know, I could close this out and still drop the hammer the last 200. What I did was a little bit different. I just, like, I don't know what came over me. It was probably the most impulsive decision I've ever made in a race.
So like, it was at 400, right?
It was 600.
600, okay.
Yeah, 600. It was literally the most impulsive decision I've ever made in a race. I don't know what it was. Adrenaline, nerves, just a combination of everything. You know, people always like to give me credit, but I tell people all the time, I go, that was really stupid of me. That was not a smart move. Like, yeah, I took literally 80% of the race out of it because only two people went with me, and that was Cesarek and Rodich. Those are the only two guys that went with me. I was like, that was a really stupid thing I did. Yeah, that wasn't what I was supposed to do. But I had no sense of pace in that moment. All I knew was, you know, you can see me say the words in the race. Like, I say fuck it. I literally say fuck it in the middle of the race. Like, we're just jogging. I'm right behind Kidder, and I'm just like, I remember 1,000 meters go. So I was like, fuck it. Like, I'm going. Like, I'm not letting this hold. And so I take off, and the crowd reaction was actually insane. You can't really tell in the race video, but like, they started like roaring, and like, you saw half the stands like stand up, like, like, what is
he's
happening?
Doing
like,
it.
Everyone's like on their feet, like, because it's also at the University of Arkansas. They don't like Oregon. They're track rivals. Like, they are right. The two meccas of track. They don't like each other. So, like, Arkansas, like, they have my back. I'll just say that. I don't know how many people after the race in Arkansas stuff came up to me just to be like, hey, that was an amazing race. Oh, we wanted you to win so bad. You did so well. And I'm like, oh, such friendly people around here. So, yeah, it was super impulsive. It wasn't exactly how we wanted to do it. But I think I just had so much adrenaline, and I was so decisive in just screw it, I'm going, that I got almost like lost in the moment. And I honestly, like, to tell you the truth, I had no concept of how fast I was going. All I knew is that I took off and I'm going to just keep going until I can't. Like, right. That was it. It was like, I'm going to go and I'm going to see how long I can just keep going until my legs say, oh, well, that's it. You're done. And unfortunately, funny enough, I actually psyched myself out a little, not a lot, but we knew where Chez liked to make his move.
Mm-hmm.
Notoriously, throughout the entire season, it was always at 250 leading into that bell lap. Okay. It was right at the bell lap. He would overtake, and then he would take that first turn, and he'd be ahead at 200, and then just that last 200, by. He didn't go by me then. In my head, as I was running that race, I knew he was behind me, and my brain was like, get ready. Like, I was, like, preparing myself to respond to it. When he didn't go, it, like, I can tell you vividly, like, I remember in my head when I hit bell and he didn't go, I was, like, almost thrown off by it. I was like, wait, where the hell is he?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, what happened? And then when he took off at 150, I was like, oh, fuck, there it is. And then when I thought that, it's just game over. I mean, and to be fair, I was gassed. Like, I was gassed. I ran a 53 to a – I ran a 151 800 in the middle of a mile race. So it's like, it's just not going to end well.
Yeah. No, but I, at the end of the day, I don't think you could have ran that race any better.
I mean, a lot of people tell me that, like, you know, they watch that race and other runners – other people to meet, they gave me a lot of credit, but they were like, dude, you made him work for that.
Yeah, more than anyone else has, really, I think.
They're like, you made him earn that. Like, yeah, he won and took off again, but, like, he had to work really hard for a longer amount of time. Like, someone was actually forcing him to, like, push more his limits than just sit back and be a strategic kick, you know? Like, people have beat him in strategic kicks, but that's not really pushing someone's physical limit.
Right.
And that's where they're like, no, you pushed him to a physical limit, which a lot of people were like, that's why he didn't go at 200. He didn't have a 250 kick. He only had a 150 or 125 kick left in him because you took that out. Like, he was only comfortable taking off at the very, very last second versus a lot sooner than he would normally. And I was like, okay, like,
right. I guess so.
I took Jordan to the buzzer, like, all right, like, fine, I'll take that in the wind column, I guess. Like, nah, it's something I, like, I look back and it would have been nice to be like, yeah, I was, you know, won national title and be that, like, crazy underdog story, you know. Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, like, who I'm up against. I can't even be mad at that, you know. It's just like, he's literally, again, he's just literally the greatest college athlete in the history of sports. Like,
what are you gonna
do?
Yeah.
I'm just a band geek from Salinas, like, leave me alone.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I was really cool to rewatch that today and obviously have you on. Just a great race, really inspiring the way you went after it. And it was so funny. I was looking in the comments and it was like, it almost looked like reading your lips, like, did you really say fucking? And I was like, oh, no way. Probably not. I got to ask him about that. And confirmed, you did.
I did.
That's awesome.
I did 100%. I actually kind of feel bad for Brandon Kidder because he's had to hear me yell two things. So, okay. Now rewind to that 355 in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
He's who I passed, right? Like, he's who I beat. He got second. I got first in that race. Well, so I had friends at the top of the turn in Seattle, like, going nuts. I had one friend. His name is Tim Cummings. I don't know if you know who he is, but he ran for UW. And he was, I had met him the Thanksgiving break before I actually partied with the UW cross team that Thanksgiving break.
Nice, nice.
But I saw him at the top of the turn literally do this. He was like, jumped up, slaps his hands on the track. It's like yelling at me. And I looked at him. I literally looked at him before I started kicking and I yelled, I got more, baby. And they took off. And so that's what Brandon Kinner heard me yell right before I leave.
God.
I'm literally mid-race and I go, I got more, baby. And I freaking took off. And then now you fast forward to national championship race. I'm right behind him and I go, fuck it. And I,
that's awesome. Like, man, poor Brandon Kinner.
I'm an asshole.
Yeah. I'll have to get him on, and we'll get his take on that.
Yeah, you could ask him, be like,
do you remember that?
Do you remember when Christian said, fuck it, and then when he said, I got more? Like,
that's awesome.
I'm like, literally, it was like right in his ear in both those races when I said that. I'm like, oh, that's kind of unfortunate timing. I hope you don't think I'm an asshole or anything. It's just adrenaline, man. It's just competitive adrenaline.
All right, so that was your senior year.
Yep.
Some great highlights, stories. Talk about your decision to turn pro after that, after you graduate.
Yeah, I mean, being a professional athlete was never something I desired to be. It was never a goal of mine. Even in college when I started running sub-4, like, that never entered my brain. Like, go pro. You can be sponsored by Adidas. Like, all I knew was, like, again, my mind worked pretty naively, pretty simply. And I think, like, it worked for me. And it works in running when you think about things simply and don't overthink.
Definitely.
Right? Simplistic. So it's like my mind was just like, okay, you ran a 3:47 in junior college. You ran a 4:01 converted in college. Okay, goal is sub-4. Sub-4. Now let's run a little faster sub-4. Now let's do this. It was just like every time I got faster, it was just like, okay, get a little faster again. Get a little faster. That's all it was. And then all of a sudden I landed at the spot where I had agents phoning me going, hey, we want to represent you and get, you know, help you become a professional runner or athlete. And I was just like, oh, so we're here now. Like, it literally was just like, it kind of landed in my lap, like, here. And it wasn't like, again, it wasn't never a goal of mine. I tell people, like, dude, oh, you must have been wanting to be a pro runner your whole life. And I'm like, no. I didn't even think about it till the end of my senior year until agents started approaching me. And I think that's what helped me get there was that, like, I didn't think that far down the road. I just thought very simply. So it wasn't like a tough decision when I figured out that I was desirable as a professional. Like, we're like, oh, you could continue to do this as a living and just run for a living. How does that sound? And I'm like, sounds awesome.
What, yeah, right?
Like, yeah, so it's like when that opportunity presented itself, it was just kind of like, it was a no-brainer, really. It wasn't even a question of if I wanted to do it. It was just like, where do I sign? You know, like, so it was a pretty easy decision once I figured out that that was a, once I realized that that was a realistic possibility and that I could make a living doing that, I was no doubter, like, just like, absolutely, let's do this. So, and that, again, that thought never even entered my mind till my senior year.
Wow.
Never even a goal of mine.
That's cool. So it sounded like you were looking one step ahead and just taking one thing at a time, which probably helped you a lot.
Yeah, I didn't look too far down the road. I mm-hmm. very just short, like, short-term goals, short, like, I had long-term goals, like, but it was really just like, take it one year at a time, one season at a time, one workout at a time, and stack them all together. Before you know it, you stack enough, you know, good workouts, good races, PRs, you're just gonna end up places, you know, like, think in the short term and take those small victories, you know, because people get so fixated on that big goal. I feel like they get disappointed when they're just like not there instantly,
right?
And they don't realize, like, dude, this shit takes time.
Yeah, for sure. Before my next question, we hit another half hour, so we're gonna pause. And so I met with you after, I don't know which Long Island mile was it, but it was after a Bayshore. You were talking to some of me and my teammates, and you were saying how you were training mostly on your own. Is that how it was for most of your pro career?
I mean, so I got shout outs to give now, because I was never part of a training group other than the Big Bear Track Club, which did not work out well at all. Not honestly, not even going to get into that.
Okay.
I've never spoken on that, and I'm not getting started now. It just didn't work out. It just wasn't a great situation for me. And at the time, I was dating Stephanie Brown, who was also a professional athlete, and we kind of were both on the team. Didn't work out. We did our own thing after that. So our coach. That's when I went back to Bozeman. That was the only time I left Montana. Was that 6 month period where I was in Big Bear. Other than that, tiny amount of time where I was with a group and I had people to train with, I mainly literally trained alone. Now, this is where shout outs come to play. Shout out Carson Vickery, Ethan Wilhelm, Omar Gonzalez, who else? Anyone at Montana State, Diego, Ty, Cam, you guys know who you freaking are. Anyone who I've done a workout with. So, like, I say I trained alone a good majority of the time, but the reality is, like, I trained with the Montana State guys. Like, that was my training group, which was awesome. I trained with them. And now, granted, my seasons and their seasons didn't always line up as far as training period and what I'm doing versus what they're doing. You know, professional outdoor track usually goes into the summer, and they're done by, like, May. Some of them get to June, you know, national championships. So come, you know, May or June, summertime, and that's like main grind time, main track season for me. Yeah, that's when I was solo dolo in my main speed workouts. In my longer tempos, aerobic stuff, I had guys, again, like Carson, Ethan, shout out those guys. They're literally just grinders who just loved running. Carson ran for KU. Ethan ran at Montana State. They're just like psycho mileage guys who do like 100 plus mile weeks, which is not me at all, right? But it worked because any tempo, any aerobic workout, guess who's there to help pace and guess who's there to grind with me? Them. Again, when we flipped to speed, like, that's just all me. Like, I wasn't gonna, like, not that they, I mean, okay, they couldn't keep up, but that's okay. Like, that's not what they
not
do.
Their strength.
Like, they're aerobic
yeah.
freaks. Like, that's not what they do. So, like, did I train alone? Yes. But did I really? No. Like, I had a team. I had a support system. I had a group of guys in the Montana State team and in, you know, my friends who just purely trained and unselfishly. Like, I love those guys to death because it was literally out of the goodness of their heart that they would just train. It, like, they had, like, yeah, they did races and they had goals of their own. But the reality is they showed up to that track to help me. They showed up to that track to help Stephanie at the time. Like, they just did it because they wanted to help us in our goals. And I'm forever thankful for that, man. Like, so I had good people in my corner. I didn't train totally solo. Sometimes I did, depending on the day, depending on the workout. But I definitely had a support system behind me in the Montana State team and in individuals like Ethan and Carson. And Sam Reed, I love you. Oh, I didn't forget that. Okay.
Shout out to Sam Reed. But
yeah, hell yeah, man.
I think that's the name of the game, really, is having people behind you, because no one, I think, has ever succeeded in the professional level and running totally on their own. So
No, yeah. It really isn't. You know, Bozeman, MSU, the coaches, the people there, I love that area. If I have my way, I'll be back in a few years, you know, find a job out there and move back. But I don't know. We'll see about that. I just love that area so much. It's it's a special place to train and to go to school. And just, it's a great community and great mindset out there. I don't know. Love that area. And I was never alone. Like, definitely had the team and the support system that I needed to succeed when I was out there.
Definitely. It's a new question I wanted to ask.
Okay.
Do you have a biggest rival you look back on in terms of your professional career?
Not really. Like, I never really had, like, beef with anyone in the pro running.
Like someone you were always, like, neck and neck with.
I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, was I always neck and neck with? Like, funny enough, it's like Pat and I always had some good races.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Casey, right there. Yeah. shoot, man, I'm trying to like really like rack my brain here. Honestly, I can't really pin it on like one specific person or anything like that. Like, I was pretty cool with everyone, and like at the end of the day, it was just like we're all competitors. We're all there to, you know, achieve the same goal, to, you know, drop our time, get a time, you know, a signing bonus or whatever, like win the race, get the race winnings, you know. Like, it's funny, at the pro running level, it's very money driven, you know.
Right. Like,
a guy could get fifth, but if he PRs big enough, he's walking out with $5,000 in his pocket on a time bonus, you know, go woo, like, just like he doesn't care. So it's like, not money hungry in a bad way, but there's obviously incentive
motivation.
For a runner, if you're signed and you get, like, if you drop a time or however, yeah, you're pretty stoked no matter what. So we're all out there for the same thing, and unless it's like a championship race where placing matters much, much more, most of those races are basically time trials. You just hope for good weather, you hope for a good pacer, and like, hey, let's go rip it, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it sounds like a lot of fun, just ripping it and just having some. So it's not like overly strategic, just more like time trial, like you said, other than the championship.
Depends on the race and depends on the setup. Some races have pacers, some races don't. Some races put up $5,000 for first place with no pacer. Guess what? That's not going to be a fast race.
Yeah.
$5,000 for one race with no pacer? We're going to... No! Like, you know, like last lap.
That's so funny.
Like, yeah, but if it's like, hey, we're putting up a 5,000 bonus if you hit this time and win, and we have a pacer, now it's kind of like, all right, we know what the goal is here. The goal is to run insanely fast. Some races, depending again how they run or the weather or the pace or whatever, like just depends. Just depends on the race.
Gotcha.
Again, because in the pro running world, there's money on the line. It can get pretty strategic if there's a lot of money on that line.
Definitely.
So yeah,
I could see that.
Us mid D is just so deep. Everybody is kind of a rival. Yeah. Oh, US mid D. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we're rivals, but we're just, at the end of the day, dude, you got to realize, like, we're all at the bar drinking after together.
Right. Yeah. It's all love.
You know, like, USA Championship ends, and like, there's only maybe a couple guys who, like, you know, we're not like going crazy, but like, we're all chill, you know, chilling with each other. Unless there's actually some like personal vendetta where off the track something in their personal lives kind of collide, which that stuff does happen as well. But like, outside of that, if you're just a competitor, you're a competitor. It's not really a, you know, a hate or a rival.
Yeah, that's what's cool about it. You could, you know, beat someone by 0.1 and then share a beer with them afterwards. So.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I had a good laugh. It was with Ben Blankenship. I narrowly edged him for second, because I got second at the Falmouth Mile. Craig won it. Ingles, I got second. Ben won. But it's funny because Ben was like, when they were announcing top three, they were like trying to organize. I'm like, who got first? And Craig was like, oh, and then who got second? And Ben goes, me. And I go, no, you didn't. I did. And he goes, no, you didn't. I was like, you didn't see me. He goes, where the hell were you? And I was like, in lane three. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like jokingly, you know, he's just like, you gotta be kidding me, right? And I'm like, no, like, check. And then, like, they were looking, like, it's Serratos. And he was like, you can't, like, because it's like, I think it was like $1,000 difference, right?
Right.
So it was like, but like, at the end of the day, it's still like more just like, oh, like, really?
You got
like,
me.
That happened. Like, okay, you got me, you know, like, in those races, like, obviously, championship races are different. There's a lot more emotion, there's a lot more, like, fire. Especially, hopefully, no one races dirty. You know, sometimes that happens, and people take it personally. Their feelings get hurt. It can happen. Emotions get high when you're talking about professional racing and professional level, and just guys who are all equally as competitive. It's nothing personal. It's just competitive nature. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have trouble separating that, though. That's where rivals and, you know, taking things personal come and get into play, where it's like, we're all there to do the same thing, and we're all super competitive. And if you take that personally, then that's where a rival gets created, because you're taking things personally. When at the end of the day, it's like, dude, we all want it just as bad, and we're all here to do the same thing.
Gotcha.
Like, how can you be mad at the end of the day?
Right. Yeah, that's definitely the right way to look at it. So how do you look back on your professional career? Is there a highlight race that sticks out to you?
Man, I hate to be brutally honest, but I'm going to. I want to use the one word to describe my professional career, and that's a disappointment. For me personally, I know. I hate to be brutally honest and let this can of worms out, but like, that is personally how I feel about my professional running career. I think I underperformed. I think I was in a lot better shape in a lot of different time periods where I didn't really show how fast I could run. I think I wasn't – I didn't know how to handle a lot of things mentally, whether it was the professional running scene or I got better. I definitely got better, especially in 2017. I second at USA Championships in the indoor mile. I was fifth in the USA Championships in the outdoor 1500. I PR'd both those years, 354 in the mile and 336 in the 1500. I had a phenomenal year that year. That was, I would say, my mental breakout year, because, like I said, I've always been able to get in phenomenal shape. Like, my coach has always said, like, could break 350. Like, he always told me that. It's like, you've been in that kind of shape where you're so close. Like, I truly, I was like, well, the race just hasn't happened then yet. You know, I guess, like, we just haven't had that race where we just fly and everything, you know, the weather, the pace, and everything's perfect. We just haven't had that. And 17 is like where I made my mental jump, but I got hurt and my 2018 year kind of went to shit. And I didn't get re-signed to Adidas. And when I didn't get re-signed, that was kind of like the end for me, like mentally, because I went through a lot that year in 2018. So like at the time, me and Stephanie had broken up. That really fucking sucked because we'd been together for almost 2 years and we'd lived together. That just fucking sucked. I was hurt. So I felt super depressed. And not in like the haha, I'm saying that like jokingly, I was really just not in a good place mentally. And I missed all of my indoor season that year, and my coach, we finally get healthy. We finally figure out what was wrong with me. And we get healthy in like March, late March, early April. So we have like 2.5 months to get ready for USA Championships. And I'm looking at my coach going like, what the hell are we going to do? And he's like, look, you get in shape faster than anyone I've met in my entire life. We're going to crank it hard. He's like, we have to. He's like, it's going to be 2.5 months of the shittiest training I've ever given you, because this is not a long-term plan. This is a we need to get in shape now plan and just try to do your best at USA's. I go, okay. So we hit it hard, and I got in shape, and I ended up making finals still at the USA Championships and placing eighth that year, which isn't a great placing, but it's like you think about 2.5 months of training after being hurt for 9, I make finals, I get eighth, and outperform runners who were healthy the entire year. And I still, you know, make finals and get eighth. So that to me, and then that same, later that summer, I ran 356 still at a race in South Carolina. I ran 356. So I'm like, wow, I hope, at the time I was like, I hope that was enough for Adidas to kind of be like, yeah, like, we know what he can do when he's healthy. He's had some rough times, but look what he still did and like proved. And like, but then at the end of the day, this sport, like any other sport, is a business. It's cutthroat. It's perform. And that's all they really care about. Like, it's just kind of reality. It's like, you're expendable. You're expendable. Everyone's expendable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like in any sport, traded, dropped, cut, you know, it's just how it is. And I don't take that personally. But that's just the reality. And for me, when I didn't get that, I didn't want to try anymore, unfortunately. Like, I was so – I put so much emotion and mental strength into that, like, that entire year. And from getting – you know, from a breakup to trying to recover to training, get, like, I just put so much into that year that when I didn't get the payout or the recognition or the pat on the back or whatever in return, I just said, I can't do this anymore. Like, if this is kind of how it works, which is the reality of things, I'm not willing to put myself out on the line anymore for that. And that was kind of all she wrote, man. It was just like, I had good moments and, you know, freaking grew so much from the entire experience. It still feels like a dream. I told people, I go, it doesn't feel real to be like, yeah, I was a professional athlete at one point. Like, to even say that, I'd be like, yeah, I was sponsored by Adidas for 3.5 years. I traveled to Europe. I traveled all over the country. I was training at USA Championships. At one point, I was almost a USA champion. You know, at one point that indoor season, I was tied for the fastest mile in the world. Now, granted, not many races were run that year yet. But still, I was like, at one point, I could say I was tied for the fastest mile time in the world. Like, that's crazy. That's crazy to be able to say it. So, like, my experience was, like, more in lessons learned, less in, like, accomplishments. Not that I didn't accomplish anything, but for my own personal goals and what I was shooting for and what I wanted to achieve, I didn't hit the mark at all. So that's why I use the word disappointment in my accomplishments. But in life, you know, like, success. Like, I learned a lot. I'm better for it. I don't regret any of my decisions or my races or anything like that. I kind of look back at it and be like, you know what? Yeah, you didn't reach your personal track goals as a pro runner, but I think you took more. I think I took more from the entire experience as a whole. Just more than I think a lot of people. Not that people don't gain a lot of experience from this, but I personally just, I grew a lot. I learned a lot, and I'm very thankful for that. I'm very thankful for more the experience and the life lessons I learned, less than like what I accomplished on the track as the time or a race. Like, I'm more thankful for like the people I met, the experiences I learned, the runners and that I got to talk to and impact. You know, when I went to a meet and, you know, they'd ask me questions or if I impacted them in a positive way, like, I'm more thankful for that than for like, oh yeah, I won a race. Oh, I ran right this time, you know? So
definitely. As a honest spectator, I can say that you definitely gave back more to the sport than you took, if that makes sense. And you were definitely an influence on me. I think you and probably Andrew Weeding were my two favorite runners that I look up to. So
Andrew Weeding's awesome.
Yeah.
He's a really cool dude.
Yeah. I asked him to come on and he said he would, so we're hopefully get that going. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That'll be super, thanks, freaking, man, cool.
But
I'll have to I think I followed you the Instagram one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know when he comes on. No worries. Come watch.
But yeah, either way, I think you had a great career. Like I said, I still look up to you. So just thank you. I have a couple.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man.
Yeah. So, and like you said, you have no regrets. So that's all you can really ask for at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, people, you know, it's so funny because like my dad sometimes will just like go with a little, like just a little pebble, just like, you didn't even hit your peak. You know, like, and I know, and I didn't. Like, the reality is like, after the age that I'm at, I'm only 28, you know, like, I didn't. I mean, I'm still not, like, am I content and okay with saying, you know what, I'm proud of everything that I did, and, like, I left it all out there, and there's nothing more I have. I have nothing left to give and prove to the sport, or to anyone.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
That is what I am most proud of, and where I've reached a point in my life where, like, I can truly say that, one, again, I got nothing left to give to the sport. I gave it my all, my mental, my emotional, and I have nothing left to prove to anyone else. And I don't mean that in an asshole way. I just mean, like, I am happy with what I did. Therefore, if you think, you can think whatever you want about anything. I know what I've accomplished. I know what I took from it. And I hang my hat on that, you know? It's actually what's the word I want to use? It's really self-like fulfilling to know that I had gotten to a place where I could mentally almost like be
satisfied.
At peace.
Yeah.
Yeah. Satisfied and at peace, because like I used to care so much about what everyone thought. And I still care about what people think, but I care about what certain people think. There's a difference, you know, like,
right.
I care about what the people who actually, you know, are like, matter in my life or impact me in a positive way where I want to give them back. But it's like, you can't care about what everyone thinks. You'll drive yourself crazy. You know, you can't satisfy everyone. So I'm like, you know what? I'm focusing on what I took from it, and I'm going to be proud of what I did. And that's kind of it, you know, just be at peace with it. And I am, like, I got nothing left. Like I said, I got nothing left to prove to the sport or to anyone, and I got nothing left to give to the sport. I gave it my all, and, you know, I'm that's it. Like, I'm out. And I still run, man. I still run. I love it. If anything, I love running now more than I ever have, truly.
Nice.
And a quick little fun side story. Right before I was about to, like, announce it, like, I'm done. You know, like, this is it. Like, I bumped into Nick Simmons at the Salt Lake City Airport. And Nick's known me for a little while now. Love him to death. One of the most genuine, just down-to-earth homies you'll ever meet. Such a good dude. Shout out Nick Simmons.
Definitely.
American legend. Honestly.
American. Another legend. D3. Shout out D3.
No, literally legend. I bump into him, and, you know, I'm like, dude, how's it going? It's like, hey, good to see you. Like, where are you going? I was like, oh, I'm going back to Bozeman for the holidays. Like, where are you going? It's like, oh, going to Oregon for some Run Gum convention or, you know, some business stuff. And I'm like, nice, nice. And he goes, how's training going? I'm going, and I look at him, I go, well, it's actually funny you should ask. I go, I haven't really made this public yet or said it, but I was like, I'm actually made the decision that I'm done. Like, I'm going to retire from the sport. And he looks at me, and he kind of, like, has this face of, like, shock at first. Like, when he looks at me, he just goes, dude, how's it feel? Like, he smiled and, like, goes, how's it feel? Like, to just be like, you know. And I looked at him, and I was like, dude, it feels good, honestly. Like, and he just looks at me and goes, I promise you, you're going to love running now more than you ever have. He goes, it's just so nice. He was talking because he had just retired, you know, not too long ago after that. Before that, he's like, it's just so nice to get back to it being simple and no bullshit, no, you know, stress, no work. And you just let it be what it is for you, you know? And he said that, and, you know, he was freaking right, man. Like, I love running now more than I ever have again. And it's just awesome to kind of, again, let it be that simple joy in my life that that I can turn to again without any stress or worry or, oh, I got to work out or, oh, this race or, oh, I better perform it. No, it's just like, let's just throw some headphones on, listen to some freaking, you know, dubstep or 2000s hip hop, go on a freaking jog and just jam out, you know? And I just smile the whole time. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
Like, this is awesome. So
that's the beauty of it. And I think Nick Simmons is the perfect guy to run into right before you announce your retirement.
Yeah, that was
it's like serendipity.
Yeah, it really was. It was good to see him too. One of those guys that kind of, like, lights up a room and makes everybody smile all the time, you know? And definitely. Like, it was like him saying that to me, and thinking back now, I'm like, that, like, you were right, dude. Like, 100%. He was right. Marcy, thank you for the 5 bits, by the way, dude. Love you. Yeah, no, definitely. It's my running career story from literally whatever high school to pros, and even now, just what running's meant to me. And it's been a roller coaster, to say the least.
Yeah, seriously.
Everything exceeded my expectations, like, of what it would do for me and where I thought I'd be, just everything. So I'm very, very, very just humbled and grateful for what running and the people who I met throughout my journey, like, did for me. It's just awesome.
Definitely
fun. Enough, I actually have that right behind me is a framed Hartnell.
There you go.
Junior college jersey. Above it, you can't see though. I mean, you could on tree. Above it are a pair of orange Mambas. Like, the you remember those?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Careful.
Not that bad. Look at these things.
Oh, man. The OGs.
They're actually not even torn or anything. Look at these things. They're, like, not in the worst shape. Like, there's no holes in them. I think
they smell, though, don't they?
Oh, God. I don't know. They got a little wear right there, but nothing crazy, man. Like, these are still wearable now. Who wants to buy these? I'll sell them on eBay.
What size?
10.5, I think. I don't know. I'm not smelling them.
Yeah.
They are awesome. Size... Oh, 11. Why was I wearing size 11? I'm definitely a 10.5. What was I... Yeah, man, the classic Mambas, though.
Those are the OGs.
Spikes, dude, these are the OGs. Like, these spikes, when they came out, these were elite. These were these spikes. Like, nothing was better than the orange Mambas. Not even close. Not even close.
All right, so now that you brought out the spikes, obviously you're at peace for your decision to, stop competitively running and pursuing that goal. But I have to ask, do you ever get the itch to rip a local 5K?
Okay, you know what I've been doing lately as far as running? I won't even go for like a 30-minute jog or an hour. No, I'll like run around my block, do some like dynamic speed drills, and then I'll throw on some flats and just rip some like strides up and down my block, like sprints, like where I'm just like, let me just turn on the wheels again. I'll do like 10 of them. I'll put my trainers back on, take another little 5-minute jog around the block, call it a day. Like, sprinting for me lately has been, like, so fun. I'm just like, I just want to, like, let it rip, you know? Like, so what I've been itching to do, because spikes, but because COVID and California and pandemic and I'm in the Bay Area, all the tracks are closed, or as far as my knowledge, all the tracks are closed. What I've been itching to do is spike up and go to a track and just rip some 200s. Like, I just so badly, just, like, just for fun, too, like, mile warm up, do some drills, throw on the spikes, have fun, be a kid, just fly. No stopwatch, nothing. Just run 200s, take as much recovery as you want. You know, like, that's what I literally do when I run now, too. I don't wear a watch. I don't time myself. I don't know how far I'm going. I just run like a fucking little kid, like a child.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the not even the sport, just running in general. And I think I definitely fall victim to getting wrapped up in Strava and, you know, looking at my watch and so I'm definitely gonna try that.
You should try it. You don't have to do it every run, but every now and then it's just nice.
Yeah,
it's just nice. Like, you just don't worry about the pace or the distance or just enjoy the day, release some energy, let it be as sit. Like, that's what I like literally love about running right now. Like, I am enjoying running at its absolute simplest form. Again, no pace, no workout, no watch. Whatever I feel like doing, I do. If I feel like going for, a longer run, I don't even know how far I go, but I just go. Until I go, that was good enough. Let me go back now.
Right.
Or if I feel like sprinting, I'll go sprint. Or if I feel like, I just literally running is like, I will do whatever I feel like doing. And it's just so fun.
That's awesome.
So nice.
Yeah.
It really is.
All right, I got a couple more questions before we wrap up. We hit another half hour, so another quick pause.
Oh.
So we're back. A couple final questions. I was on your Wikipedia page, and I saw the nickname Buzzard. Is there a story behind that?
Yeah. I don't know who made that fucking Wikipedia page. It's scary accurate, man.
Really?
It's scary accurate. Yeah, I mean, like I tell people, like, you could Google me and find out more about me. Then I could probably tell you, like, it's all there. And when I look at, I read through it one time, just be like, you see what it says? And I'm like, yeah. And like everything. I'm like, wow. Like, whoever made this or updates it, like, it's got, in my head, I'm like, it's got to be a family member, right? It's like, none of my friends, I mean, some of my friends know my nickname is Buzzard, but that is a family nickname. But as a family nickname dating back to when I was, like, a kid. Like, I'm talking maybe second grade. And what happened was, so my mom owns her own beauty salon. She cuts hair. This is where it all ties in.
Mm-hmm.
One day she gives me a buzz cut. Just, like, I don't know. I was a kid. I can't remember why, but she gave me a buzz cut. I go home, and my dad, being just dad joke guy that he is, literally, no, I'm not dropping phrases. Marcy, refresh. My dad, being just the guy he is, he goes, hey, you look like one of the buzzards from the Looney Tunes. I go, huh? Like, I come home and I have this buzz cut. He goes, you look like the buzzard from the Looney Tunes. So like when I remember how I said I have those images.
Yes.
For the sports podcast, my image, I'll pull it up right now on my stream, is this one. This is who my dad said I looked like. It's right there in the corner. Who he said I looked like when I got my buzz cut. I don't know why. I think he just put the word buzzard in buzz cut, so it's like it was funny to him because he's a dad, you know, whatever. So that's literally it. Like, he just started calling me buzzard. It was just buzzard. Hey, buzz. And then he would shorten it to buzz. Hey, buzzard. My uncles call me it. In middle school, I would literally write on my homework assignments, Buzzard Serratos, and
whoa.
My teachers knew who it was, and they called me Buzzard. And so it's like, that's literally been a nickname since I was, it's a family nickname, just because of a dang haircut my mom gave me and a connection to the Looney Tunes that my dad made. He just started calling me Buzzard. He still calls me, hey, Buzz, grab me a beer, you know, Buzz, get over here, help me in the kitchen, you know, like,
wow.
That's just the nickname. Hence,
Hyper Buzz?
Yes.
Nice.
Hence, Hyper Buzz. I was like, okay, adjective, nickname. There.
Boom.
Boom. There it is. Hyper Buzz.
All right. Perfect. So before we go, I think two more, and we'll get you out of here.
No worries.
So I stream too. So if you ever want to co-stream,
yeah,
you can definitely. Pirate Radio Pod.
Yep. I got to make sure I also hit you back on the Instagram here real quick.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah, dude, no, I got you. All right, there we go.
All right.
Got it.
Yep. So question I ask all my guests is if you – and I should have put this in the question sheet or whatever, but we'll get you on the spot. If you could have dinner with any dead celebrity or athlete, who would it be?
They have to be dead?
Yes.
Oh, so that's how you got your Twitch name? Yeah, Marcia, you never knew that story? That's literally how I got my Twitch name. Oh my god, okay. Celebrity or athlete who's passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, at this point, like, I'm Kobe.
Yeah.
I'm not even a Lakers fan.
Yeah.
I'm a Warriors fan. I'm a diehard Warriors fan, and to this, I could easily ask a Kobe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think, like, there's, I mean, no, like, I honestly can't think of anybody else. Like, a celebrity, I'm trying to think of, like, people that I had, like, genuine, like, interest in, like, as a celebrity or as, like, or athlete or a celebrity who's, you know, rest in peace, is no longer with us. I can't really think of anybody.
There's one, obviously, Kobe. I've gotten an answer before, obvious. All respect. I would easily have that because of his work ethic and competitiveness. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That was the only other one. But that's – yeah.
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 I think yeah, Capri would be an interesting one.
That's what I was going to say. But, yeah, Kobe's – Kobe's
in this trailer would be pretty
– Yeah. Is that like a known thing?
What? That he did? No, I don't know.
Oh,
I just,
okay.
I mean, knowing –
yeah, it would make sense.
Him, I would not be surprised, you know. So
yeah,
I don't know, but I would say like Kobe, I mean, his story and just like who he is as a person, his grind from his book to like who he was as a person. I'd love to like pick his brain,
mm-hmm.
you know, like especially like if I could even buy a time machine. Let's take it one further. Buy a time machine and could speak to someone. I would want to go back to during my pro running days and then talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm a pro runner, to really like pick at a champion's brain and understand like the mindset and mentality and how he carries himself, like holy hell, if I could have used a talking to like that during my, you know, at any time in my life, it would have been when I was a pro runner, you know,
right,
like 100%. But yeah,
definitely the mob mentality is unmatched.
Oh,
the competitiveness and the drive, it's unparalleled. So
it really,
man,
really is.
I can't thank you enough for doing this. It's my longest podcast ever. It's just awesome. I had an awesome time.
Like I said, I definitely could have. Anyone who knows me could award you like, bro, this man will make your ears bleed.
So I definitely appreciate it. Happy to have you on again. You have an open invitation.
Dude, absolutely, man. Whenever, like, I'm, you know, where I'm at here on Twitch, and just, you know, as long as I have free time, like, I'm all for it.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll definitely try to do a co-stream. If you want to play some Fortnite, I'm down.
Okay, you back on that?
Yeah.
No, okay. So, man, I haven't touched that in a minute.
Yeah, so
we might link up. We'll see. Maybe we get you on for some Smash Bros. Teach you a thing or two.
Definitely. I appreciate that. But sweet. Final question. What would you like your outro song to be?
Ooh, my outro song? How about... the first one that popped in my head, you know what? How about Can't Be Touched by Roy Jones Jr.?
Is that like, y'all must have forgot? Is that the line?
That was the pump-up jam for 2 years straight at Hartnell for me when I was a junior guy. Dude, Can't Be Stopped by Roy Jones
Jr. Can't Be Stopped, Roy Jones Jr.
That is a motivational, that's like one of those classic, like, pre-football highlight video songs, you know, like you hear it and you're like, this literally is a song for a highlight video for football.
That's awesome. All right, yeah. Thank you so much, man, and good luck with everything. I appreciate it.
Let's link up soon.
Yeah, definitely. Turn up my mic.